It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. We're going to talk about Windows 10. We're getting close to 20H2 already. It feels like we just got 2004. Speaking of which, Surface laptops and other Surface devices still don't have the latest Windows update. Why is that? Microsoft has also spun off their creepy chatbot. We'll find out all about that and a whole lot more next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 681, recorded Wednesday, July 15th, 2020. Orbital drop shock troopers. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by LastPass. Give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. And by Roman. Skip the waiting room and awkward face-to-face. Get ED medication conveniently delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Go to GetRoman.com/Windows for a free online visit and free two-day shipping. It's time for Windows Weekly, ladies and gentlemen, from the beautiful Land O'Lakes in Lower Macungie Township. It's Mr. Paul Thurrott of Thurrott.com. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Leo.
Sitting to his left, the talented Mary Jo Foley. She does it all in Notepad at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And together they form the dynamic duo of Microsoft Reportage. And they're here to do Reportage.
Reportage?
Reportage.
Is that, like a kind of, is that a soup?
What are if we you say like, it port- in French, it's
oh, potage.
Not repotage. That's reused soup. Reportage.
What are we having for dinner tonight? Reportage.
Reportage.
Same reportage as last night.
Exactly.
We're just pretending we're in Paris, but we're not. We're in the States because no one will let us in.
Yep.
Nope.
Mm-mm. So we're stuck
kinda here. Kind of had it coming.
Kind of did. I don't blame them. Man, I can't even get into New York State anymore.
No, you can't.
I can't even get you. I can't even visit you.
Nope.
Without having to live in a dome.
No, you have to fill out that form.
Yeah.
And if you don't, $2,000 fine.
Can you believe that?
Yikes.
Wow.
It's good. It's good.
Can't you just drive into New York?
I know. I mean, yeah, you can.
What are they?
Yeah, you can.
Roadblocks across all the roads?
No.
Papers? Papers, please?
I know. It's not really enforceable, but
papers.
You know.
They're making a point. It's a point.
They're making a point.
So
that point is suck it, Florida.
Yeah, right. That's really it.
I'm pretty sure that's
But I'm a snowbird.
Seems to be a strange cross-state rivalry going on here.
Well, we have so many people who have relatives or spend time in Florida from New York, so
everybody does, right, doesn't it? Does, don't they?
Yeah.
It's the law.
Especially
if you live
here
in the Northeast, you have to go to Florida.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do.
It's like our version of, what was that science? Logan's Run.
When you're 30, you go to Florida.
You reach a certain age and you pop and then you wake up in Florida.
By that measure, I should be there right now. All right. Let's talk about Windows 10, amazingly enough. What's the latest?
Have to?
Oh my God. What's the latest? By the way, there's some problem, isn't there?
I hope so.
When isn't there? Come on.
When isn't there? Okay.
We'll get there. We'll get to
there.
That.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with the good news.
The good news. Where do we put that story? Is there good news in here? There must be good
What's a CU?
Cumulative update.
Cumulative update.
A quality update, as we
say. And
there
is a huge CU right now coming out.
For a version of Windows that doesn't exist yet.
For 20H2.
That means we've hit an important milestone, Leo.
Wait a minute.
Because
I'm confused. Right. Isn't 2082 is this fall? Okay.
Yes. Yep.
We're practically there.
Yep. Yeah, so we went through this process late last year and early this year with 20H. Sorry, we call it 2004 because God forbid. This is the first one. I think they did the first one for 2004 in December of last year, if I remember correctly, but I could be off. The fact that they labeled this a CU rather than saying it's just a new build, I think is telling. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. You know, they surprise us. They could throw in some new features still, I guess. But this indicates they're just patching it now.
Yeah. I mean, as we've brought up on the show many times, the new normal for Windows is they build the H2 builds in the first half of the calendar year, right? So as of June, it should be done. Done, you know, in air quotes. But they've already started working now on the next build, which they build between July and December, and that's what's going to be 21H1. So, yeah, if they're on their schedule, it should be done. And just updatable with fixes and patches, cumulative updates, and that's it. It makes sense, right? We think it's going to be a very minor update to 2004 when it comes out. It'll look like a service pack.
Well, yeah, but last year, if you had said, hey, 1909 is a really small update to 1903, but here are the three new features we know about, whatever they are. Do we know of any new features in 20H2?
I know. It's hard to remember back to 20H2 now, right? Like when they were doing it.
You mean 1909?
Yeah. No.
In other words,
oh, 20H2.
Let's step back here. Right, so.
Yeah. So when we started writing about 20H2, I'm trying to find my original post when we said this. It was this. No. I know. I'm like, were there any features?
No, this is what it's like. It's just.
I know. Were there any features at all?
It's got to be something, you know?
I know. There has to be something. Well, it's kind of hard to go back.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, this thing that has nothing in it is almost done. So whatever it is. Yeah. And you won't get it until September or October at the very earliest.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go.
Although we have to point out, many people still do not have 2004. So that came out starting May 27th, I believe. That's when the rollout started. And here we are July 15th. And still many people, including me, do not have it. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe some people who are normals will wait, just wait for the second half build at this point and just say, you know what? We're almost at the fall time frame now, so why not just wait?
Right. Right.
Maybe.
Yes. And I don't know that we have a story about this explicitly, but Tuesday was Patch Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a record number of patches.
123?
Yeah, some crazy number. I don't think we have this in the notes, but this is just happening. Apparently, one of the updates has broken the desktop version of Outlook, so you can look forward to that. It's been a good year all around, I would say.
Yeah.
I must start to be like New York State and ban Windows users from calling my radio show.
I know. Right. I was going to ask you if you are getting a lot of calls about 2004 or no.
Not a lot about 2004 specifically, but enough calls from people with things that don't work.
Yeah.
It is rather astonishing.
And the problem is that you can't really ask somebody, a normal person, oh, well, do you have 2004? Yeah. They say, what do you mean?
They don't know. They don't. Yeah.
Yeah, you can just be like, all right, open up RegEdit.
I don't want to do that. I don't. Not on the radio. I don't even want to say, okay, hit, you know, Windows key X, go to system property. I don't even want to say that. I just have to pretend that whatever's going on with them is normal, which it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we have a separate story later about service PCs specifically, but one of the things that's really strange about 2004 is devices of a certain type, kind of like people of a certain age, Some people are getting it and some aren't, you know, and clearly there's some kind of a software configuration or a hardware peripheral somewhere that is triggering a block. But, you know, of course, Windows is smart enough to tell you that you're not getting an update that you wouldn't have known about otherwise, but it's not smart enough to tell you why, even though it probably knows why, you know?
Right.
A lot of people think something from a dock or unplugged a USB cable or something or whatever it is would probably just get it. I've heard stories of people
who wild.
Uninstalled OneDrive and then it came down.
What?
I've heard a lot of that.
What?
Yeah.
I know. It doesn't make
uninstall
sense.
OneDrive and then you get the update and then reinstall OneDrive.
What?
Yeah.
I know. That's not an official workaround, but people have been doing it.
And all of this supports the notion that I've had for many years, which is that computer science is not science. It's black magic. And it doesn't work logically despite the ones and zeros.
Sigh.
It's really strange.
Sigh.
Great.
All right.
That's
well,
what I need over my head is that Charlie Brown black cloud thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
you know, he misses the football and is laying on his back.
Well, I don't know. Where do you want to go from here? Should we rename this show something else?
No, let's talk about 2004 because So Microsoft does have a page, which again, you wouldn't send normals to this page probably, but it's in their documentation, known issues and updates for each version of Windows. And so they always are updating this page. Right now they're updating it for 2004. So if you go to the page, it's called release information and then you can see 2004. There's a list of things they're investigating that they've resolved and there's always new things being added. Yay. That are problematic with the update. So if you look at the page right now, there are many things that are resolved that were previously problems.
But there were also like, many things that are not resolved.
That are being added. Yeah, I know. Like there's a new one that was added yesterday, it looks like. Dragging the mouse in some apps may cause issues for some IME users. That's new.
I've said this before and I'm going to say it again. Stop using the mouse. Come on.
Exactly.
It's Windows.
Yep. There's a lot of
abuse.
Third-party driver issues still there. Variable refresh rate not working with Intel iGPU still there. Investigating since May 28th. Investigating. Difficulty connecting to more than one Bluetooth device. Still investigating that. That's been there since May 27th. The Conexant audio drivers still investigating those. So there's still a lot of problems with 2004 that they're trying to squash.
Some of them go back months.
They do.
Only 2 months.
They do go back months. I know. So everybody who's complaining to me daily on Twitter, I don't have 2004 yet. I always say, you know what? That might be a good thing. Because if you look at this list, there are still a lot of things that people are encountering and having problems with. So unless there's really a reason you are super anxious to get it, I would not advise you to do a workaround to get it. Don't be uninstalling OneDrive and reinstalling it or downloading the software and going around Windows.
Back in our younger days, 2 months ago, if you had asked us,
we thought nothing was going to be wrong. Remember that?
There'd be no problems. So maybe in the future, yes, when Leo asks, should people install this? We're just going to say no comment. We have no comment.
Yeah. We have nothing to share, Microsoft's favorite.
We have nothing to share at this time. That's it. That's beautiful. Yeah. There you go.
That's a good response.
We have nothing to share.
We have nothing to share.
We have nothing additional to share at this time.
I'm not seeking it anymore. I'm just kind of saying, okay, people ask me, do you have it? I don't. Okay. But I'm not looking for it. I'm not going to go out and look for it. Yeah.
Well, in other news, Microsoft has released a fast ring, or as we now call it, a dev channel build and a wonderfully disjointed blog post from the Windows Insider teams.
Good job on that one, guys.
There's not a lot going on here. I mean, in fact, there's been several builds where there really hasn't been anything at all. But there is a new settings icon, guys. So maybe that should have been the top story.
You buried the lead again.
I know we did. Know. Okay, so look at the settings icon. Does it look different to you?
Is it way down below?
Here.
It does.
Actually, it looks so. Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at it. Okay. Really? So there's fewer little pins on the gear. Is that what it is?
Incredible.
I'm just asking.
No. The settings icon, I think literally since Windows 8, has just been white on whatever color, or if you're using a light theme, black. So now it's got colors. If you use the Microsoft Launcher, you may recognize that icon. It looks a lot like the settings icon on their Android thing.
Yeah.
But of course, it resembles the new icon style that they have for Windows 10, which will be obsolete in about 10 days because it already looks old fashioned. But there it is. It matches the other things they're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that merits an exclamation mark.
Yeah, like maybe two or three better.
Yeah. Well, when the other new feature that's in today's build is a tweak to the sound setting experience, maybe it does merit an exclamation point.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know if it's obvious, but we're looking for some good news here. And coming up short.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go.
Do I want it?
So, okay. Also, may I ask about this?
Why are they using a phone to show the...
Yeah, right. I mentioned disjointed, right? So... This blog post is so. This is a great example of why they need new writers over there. This is horrible. It's what's new in this new build for Windows 10, and then there's like other updates. Oh, there's a new launcher that's for Android, has nothing to do with Windows. And then you scroll down further, and they're like, "Hey, let's talk more about Windows. Here's some stuff about search.
That's very
It's not
confusing.
Necessarily for the latest. I know it's unbelievable. It's like
no, can I? I was going to ask you about the search. So I looked at the search. It says we've improved the search experience in Windows 10. I already have this experience on 1909. Like it looks exactly like that already.
It does.
And then I read in the blog post that if you have 1809 or higher, you have this, or it's rolling out to people who have 1809 or higher. So I think I already have this.
You do. Yeah? So the issue, like I said, is poor writing. They don't explain that. See, this is a blog post about a new build of Windows 10. You'd think this must be about the thing in the title. And this topic is not about that thing in the title. This is just Windows 10 generally. It has nothing to do with the Insider program. It has nothing to do with the dev channel. It has nothing to do with this build. They're just saying, we recently unveiled two improvements to the search bar in Windows. Okay. So, yeah, you do have this. You already have it.
Okay. I'm like looking at it. You know how I can't see UI changes, and I'm looking at my search bar and the one in the blog post. I'm like, so I think it looks the same, but maybe I'm missing something.
No, you're right. This time you're right.
Okay. I'm right for once. Yes. Yeah. So the difference, if you don't have this, is it's supposed to be a dual column experience when you go to the search box, or
right.
if you click on search,
right?
It already
is, yes, that's right. Yep.
And so on the right side,
this isn't even an update. This is server side.
It's not, right?
Well, no. So, it is an update. What they meant by server side is it doesn't require you to install anything on the client. It comes down from the server, so it will just happen automatically. Like it's not a, there's not like a KB download or something. No. It's just. And also, I should point out this settings icon thing has nothing to do with the Insider program, right? Its position in the blog post suggests that this is just, well, it does say insiders will notice. It says in this build, so he's gone back again. These people are unbelievable. All right, sorry. The settings thing, this post is, this is a this classic example of everything that's wrong with this group. Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible. The communication is terrible. It's really sad. Okay. It bothers me so much.
I like the last paragraph. If you want a complete look at what build is in which Insider ring, head over to the Flight Hub. Please note, there will be a slight delay between when the build is flighted and when a Flight Hub is updated. That's almost
Let me explain. Let me explain why it says that.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, you're right. Let me explain why that sentence is there. They used to just end the post with, "If you want a complete look at what build, you know, what build is in which ring, blah blah blah, head over." It used to say, "What features are in it in each build?" You click the link, and you'd be like, "Hey, There's no, the new build that you're just talking about is not in the flight hub. And they're like, oh yeah, that will happen in a couple of days. And they're like, well, then why did you provide the link? If it's not there now, we want to see what's there now.
Well, now we know.
And then now they say, well, there's a slight delay.
There's a slight delay between when a build is flighted and when a flight hub is updated.
Classic.
Now, also, I just saw this show up too. If you are waiting for last week's dev channel fast ring build to a 161, like you wanted to see the new start menu experience and all that other stuff, I saw Brandon LeBlanc tweet, most people in the insider program still don't have that. So
was that one an AB thing or not? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was an AB thing. Yeah, it was. Okay. So only some people got that new, the new live tiles and all that. So some people still don't have that.
I see. Yeah. I did happen to get it, but that was the thing. It was so subtle. Like I said, I had to compare it with the other, you know, another computer to see what the differences were, because it was very subtle.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So anyway, this is why we have careers.
Messy.
Explaining this nonsense.
Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So anyway, whatever you're in, if you're in the former fast ring or the former slow ring, you got a build this week. So with some degree of nothing in it. So you can enjoy that.
I'll take fixes and updates at this point.
Bob will take fixes for 200.
Tell you what.
Yeah.
Bar has been lowered.
I see that you have in your notes commentary on the... We talked a little bit about this yesterday on MacBreak Weekly. John Luigas, former Apple vice president for Europe's column that says it's the end of the line for Wintel. And I want to give you a chance. I want to give you all the room in the world to talk about this. And I want to give Mary Jo time to get the gong. So I am going to do an ad here.
Actually, I don't think it's going to be as bad as you think.
No. In fact, I might be the one who needs to be gonged. I'm just saying that.
Wow. Okay.
Because
I would enjoy that quite a bit.
I agree with Jean-Louis Gasset. But first, first a word from LastPass. How about that for a tease, right? Stay tuned for the gong. But first, a word about LastPass. We're in the LastPass studios here at Twit. We use LastPass at home. We use LastPass at work. We are all LastPass. We're a LastPass family. And you know who loves that? Well, our employees do, and our IT department does. And that's because LastPass does something heretofore impossible. It improves security and convenience at the same time. Usually it's one or the other, right? More secure, less convenient. That's what I love about LastPass. Look, IT, and please, if you're not in IT, understand, IT today is tough. There's more devices. People bring in their own devices, right? Applications, much more varied. Used to be, you have a spreadsheet, you're happy. Now there's a lot more going on. You see all the stuff you got to deal with Windows updates. Workforces are gone home, so you can't even, you know, go down the hall with your keys jingling on your belt and say, did you reboot it? You can't even do that. It's all remote. And now top it off with new threats, you know, from hackers who really say, oh, soft targets, regulations. Strong security is very tough these days. Fortunately, LastPass will help a lot. Giving your IT strong security, giving your employees something easy to use, giving your company something easy to manage. First of all, you're going to secure every entry point, and that's really important because your employees are going home with the keys to the kingdom, the bank account, the database, the customer records, everything. With LastPass, from shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services, LastPass's access solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization. You need that. You know you need that. You also want to unify access and authentications because employees can access a lot of different applications and devices, which leads to a lack of visibility of user activity between each. They're on the laptop now. They're on the desktop now. What are they doing now? LastPass Identity offers a simple integrated view across every access, every authentication task, so IT can see who's accessing what, when, and where. Awesome. You'll increase security without impacting productivity. In fact, employees love it. The single sign-on apps, they're fantastic.
Employees say that's easy. That's secure. It's more secure. Yes. No, you can't leave your business exposed, but you also, if it's too hard to use, employees are just going to bypass it. LastPass's authentication solutions and let you understand user behavior to adapt authentication based on the user, reducing friction and preventing threats. And of course, nobody does password security better than LastPass. It just goes well beyond that now with single sign-on, multi-factor authentication, and a lot more. LastPass allows employees to do their work securely, whether they're in the office, whether they're working from home. They never store or send your master password. Your data is only decrypted on device, Windows, Mac, Linux, iOS, Android. Doesn't matter. Everywhere, every browser. And it's only at the device level. Anywhere else, it's AES 256-bit encrypted. It's impermeable. I think LastPass does everything right. And if you want to secure your business and give your IT department the tools they need to keep your business safe, you need LastPass. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter where your employees are working from. LastPass.com/twit. Thank you, LastPass, for keeping this show on the air. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. And now it's time to talk about this article heralding the death of Wintel.
Yep.
And really what John
Mark Louis Twain said.
Yes. Great League.
Everyone has an opinion. Yeah. Yours is wrong.
Yeah.
No.
This is predicated on the introduction of Apple Silicon and a move by Apple away from Intel towards its own custom chips.
Yeah, and by the way, for those who are not familiar, Jean-Louis Gasset, former Apple executive, I think he took over the Mac group after Steve Jobs left the company.
I think VP of Europe and became Apple. I can't remember what his final title was, but yeah, he was there in the post Jobs, in the Jobs interregnum. Yep.
And he founded B Inc., the computer company that could have become the basis for the next Mac OS, but they bought Next instead and brought Steve Jobs back. As long ago as then, so this would have been the mid to late 90s, this guy used to blog all the time. He would do this on B's website at the time, later on other places. I don't remember the exact history of it, but I've always been fascinated by him. I agree with his opinions a lot. He's obviously an industry insider. I like him. I've always liked him.
I think he's great. He's smart. He's fun.
I think he's terrible.
Oh! Get the gong for Mary Jo!
What's up?
I never read him because I'm always wondering, why do people who understand Microsoft care what a former Apple person
thinks? Well, that's
a
good point. He did work at HP for a while.
Oh, I see.
He's not.
This is a guy who has developed operating systems, right? I mean, this is... I don't think of him as he's not a Microsoft expert or anything. I mean, he's just a industry guy.
He's got a unique perspective. I agree. He's often been wrong.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, I don't think of it in those terms. I mean, I think I told you guys the story. Mary Jo was there, but it was probably at, I almost said Tech Ed, Ignite last year or maybe the year before, something like that. Mary Jo and I had finished our thing up on the stage and had come down and some people were there and we were talking to him. And this guy said something to me sort of offhanded, like, well, you said that Google would never buy YouTube. And I was like, what? And he says, you said that Google would never buy YouTube. And I'm like, I didn't know idea what he was talking about. So I went and looked it up. And yeah, and sure enough, on Windows Weekly 2000 years ago, there was a rumor that Google was going to buy YouTube. And I was like, I don't see that happening. And here's why. And I kind of spell it why I didn't think it was going to happen. Obviously, Google bought YouTube. People harbor these grudges. I got that wrong, and he's never forgotten it. And you were wrong about this, or you were wrong about this. Like, whatever. To me, this is like decades of conversations. And I like this guy. I enjoy his blogs and whatever. And so he had written one last week called The Passing of Wintel, without a question mark. And I set it aside. I subscribe to Medium. That's where he posts now. And so I bookmarked it. And I'm like, I want to spend some time and really look at this. And I kind of read through it. And I was like, not exactly. And I And the part I took exception to, and again, I'm not doing this to blast this guy. Like I said, I still find his opinion very interesting. I don't mean like this guy said that, you know, like I don't mean it like that. But you know, I think people in this case, he falls into this kind of lose sight of some of the big picture stuff. You know, the reason that it makes sense for Apple to adopt its own chipset for the Mac is that, well, there's a bunch of reasons, but two of them are they can improve the products in tandem, right? So they can make the chips work better for the software and vice versa, which is cool.
And true, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, right. It is real. And the other very real thing is, well, it's cheaper for them to do this. I mean, they already own the chips. Like it's cheaper for them to use their own stuff. It's actually, and whether they pass those savings along to customers is one thing that people are debating. Some people believe some next generation Macs will be less expensive in part because of this. Some people think Apple would never do that and they'll keep their margins high.
We talked about that yesterday, mm-hmm. and I think the consensus was, Apple actually doesn't look at whether it's cheaper or not. What they look at is what's going to be the first premise, which is what's going to be the better product. Because they know that that's a virtuous cycle. That if they make a better product, more people will buy it. They will make more money. They're not
right. They don't care about cutting prices.
They don't look at the iPhone. That's price doesn't drive them, I guess. What drives them is making the best.
The first.
Well, there are limits. They can't go too high, admittedly. But they're not trying to get low. They're trying to make the best possible product.
Okay. Well, so I would just say both of those ideas have some merit. I don't have an opinion.
They're definitely going to save money. I mean, there's no question.
Okay. Right? There you go.
Yeah.
So his premise, part of his premise, because actually he made four or five different points about this and why this was so inevitable that ARM would take over the world and blah, 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 whatever, is that like that kind of pricing model actually works against ARM in the PC space because we already have a company, Intel, that makes a range of chips for the PC market, and it really hasn't had much competition for a lot of its lifetime. And so it has done this on its own. Like ARM can't come into what is for it a boutique market and lower prices. In fact, the opposite has occurred. If you look at the prices of ARM-based PCs, they're incredibly expensive. There's the Lenovo Flex 5G that I'm testing right now starts at, I think, $1,299. The version with an Intel chip in it, and it's a core 10th generation quad-core core processor. It's not like a low-end thing. Is, I think, $509. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, that Apple could save money by using its own chips in its own volume platform absolutely makes sense. That some version of ARM could come to the Windows PC space and trigger a price reduction is ludicrous. In fact, one of the biggest problems we've had in the PC market over the years, and Microsoft came out with Surface in part to correct this, was that PC makers had lowered the prices so much that PCs became kind of devalued. They became less, you know, less good as products. They became netbooks. You know, they were racing to the bottom. Today, the sweet spot in the PC space is in the high hundreds. You know, the sweet spot in the Mac space is in the mid 1500s or something like that. I mean, they exist at different levels. And there are things about ARM that are good for the PC that may influence Intel and AMD to do better. You know, the longevity stuff, the always on connectivity and so forth. But like pricing, that has absolutely not happened.
There was that story today in a Reuters story saying ARM is raising their prices on chip technology, right? So it starts out not low and it's going to get higher.
Yeah. I think the reality is that the PC market is this kind, it's a legacy product. We are really stuck on the Windows side with a compatibility problem that we can't get past. I mean, Microsoft refuses to leave behind any legacy software, any legacy technologies, because its business customers rely on stuff from the 1980s or 90s or whatever it is. They just can't do it. And that is a problem ARM does not solve, you know? And so Apple, by being more aggressive all along, has been able to move the Mac forward in ways that we just don't do on the PC side. And it moving to ARM can work. There's no doubt about it. Mm-hmm. It's not clear that Windows moving to ARM will ever work. And my experience, I think we talked about this last week, my experience with a a modern ARM-based PC has been very disappointing. Whereas I think the Mac is going to be, I think it's going to succeed wildly. I think it's going to be great.
Right. The whole premise of his argument was what Apple's doing is going to force Microsoft to do something with Windows 10 on ARM. I disagree completely. I don't think it's going to force Microsoft to do that. I don't.
They really kind of can't. I mean, you can't really get started on Windows 10 on ARM until they fix all of the problems. And the big two remaining, well, the big three remaining problems are performance and then compatibility, specifically with x64 software, which is a lot of it. And the final piece, and this is the real killer, is driver compatibility. The driver you can't take an x86 driver and use it on an ARM PC. And until that may never be possible. Until there's some way to do that, it's always going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Apple, again, they're different. Like a Mac and a Windows PC are very similar. They look similar, they work similar, all that kind of stuff. But Apple, by having this closed ecosystem, there are pros and cons, but some of the pros is that this kind of technology transition is easier. I mean, it's not easy, but it's possible. Mm-hmm. And on the Windows side, what we've seen, which is these little side projects where it's like, hey, remember when Windows NT used to be cross-compatible against multiple platforms? Yep. Yeah, nobody does that either, but it used to be. And now we're going to do that again. Yep. But all they're doing is reintroducing all the same problems they had back then. The reason NT turned into Windows, turned into what we have today, is because the performance wasn't there. And they were like, well, we wanted not to do Intel-specific assembly language and optimizations, but now we're going to do that because we need it to work well. Now we're going to move the graphics into the kernel because it's the only way for the performance to be any good. Mm-hmm. And then instead of being this like secure cross-platform thing, it becomes this less secure, uniplatform thing, which is what we have today.
What I feel like is the disconnect here with Jean-Louis Gasset and other people who are big Apple advocates is when they see Apple do something, they think like an Apple user or an Apple advocate, but they don't think like a Windows person, right? And so Microsoft's worldview doesn't look anything like Apple's, and it doesn't matter to them, right? Like they're going to keep using Intel and AMD. They're going to keep using those chips. That's what their customers are using. I mean, look at when they came out with this AMD-based Surface, how many people even wanted to try that, right? Like it's just very ingrained if you're a Windows user to be Intel. And it doesn't mean Microsoft loves Intel and that Intel is perfect. It doesn't mean any of those
Microsoft
things.
Microsoft can't stand Intel.
Right, right, right. So it's not like, Intel. But I feel like people who were making all these big assumptions that because Apple does X means Microsoft will do Y, you just don't understand how Microsoft thinks. You don't.
Apple has absolutely had an outsized influence compared to its, market share or whatever, right?
Size,
And they've influenced us in a software way, in a hardware way. Yeah,
people. And there are too many people at Microsoft who tried to make Microsoft be Apple. Most of them are gone, but not all of them. I agree with you. There's still some people in there who give Apple an outsized amount of kind of not respect, but just fear, maybe.
They hold them up on this pedestal, like they're showing us the way again. And they're different. They're just different, and it's like good, bad, or indifferent. I mean, I feel like there is a happy middle ground between the two extremes that are Microsoft and Apple when it comes to backward compatibility, and that we're never going to get there. So it doesn't matter what that middle ground is. I mean, we are, for better or worse, at one end of that extreme. And that is what prevents ARM from ever really happening. If you could run an ARM-based Windows PC and never use any normal software, it works pretty good.
Yeah.
If for some reason what ships in the box with Windows 10 is all you'll ever need, it's okay. It's okay.
Many of their customers, that is okay, right? Like there's a group of people that's okay for.
Maybe.
I think.
But I mean,
maybe not enthusiast types, but
But you get it home, you use it for a couple of weeks. There must be a term for this. Today, for example, I tried to install some software and it was zipped as a 7-zip file. Now, 7-Zip is a software application. You can install it. It's free. I don't I don't just install it. Like, it's something I only install when I need it. And this is the term I'm looking for. There must be a word for that thing. Like, so I had to install 7-Zip so I could unzip this thing and then install the other application. It's not super essential to me. But every once in a while, I run into something like that. And that's what it's like to be a Windows user. And the problem with ARM is, 7-Zip probably works fine on ARM. I actually have no idea. But you run into, you may not notice it on day one. You may go through a day and be like, oh, this thing works great. And then you're out in a hotel on a road trip, or you're doing whatever it is. You want to connect to a fax or a scanner or something. And you're like, this works on my other computers. How come it doesn't work here? And you don't know as a normal person why. And that's the downfall to ARM. That's the thing everyone who uses this will run into. It is inevitable. Not to mention the performance problems. Like, it's horrific. And this is after years of work. This is after taking the first gen devices that had 25 hours of battery life and chopping away at that so they could get the performance up to some minimally acceptable level. And now it only gets like 12 hours of battery life, but still really good, right? You know, if it doesn't run everything you need, it's not Windows. Yeah. It's something else. It's something less.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay.
That's
let me throw another weird monkey wrench into this convo, because you probably heard this on Twitter this week too. So there was a story, I think it was Bloomberg saying, it was Wall Street Journal saying ARM Holdings is for sale, likely, or they're going to IPO the company, right? So I had so many people saying to me, do you think Microsoft's going to buy ARM? I'm like, no, I don't at all. I mean, like, that's people are just saying, of course, that's what they're going to do, given what Apple just did. Like, Microsoft's going to go buy ARM. I'm like,
no. They don't need to do chips. And by the way, it would cost more than Nokia did.
And so, they don't need that. So. It's not core to their business. No. It's not.
Anyone who asks you that, you can tell their head is in the wrong place, because there are people at Microsoft who still think Apple or Microsoft needs to be Apple and compete with Apple and whatever. There are absolutely people in this community who think if Microsoft could just do XXX, they'll be back in mobile. There'll be another platform. We're back, baby. And it's like, you know, Microsoft has this cute little hardware business. They do absolutely make custom chipsets and everything. They talk about how they worked with AMD and Qualcomm and I guess Intel as well on special versions of their chips for Surface devices and all that. And that's all very interesting and everything. But when you look at a company like Apple that sells billions of devices, or Google and its partners, which sell many billions of devices, having that integration of hardware and software, that's when that makes the most sense, right? When you're literally the platform that matters is you're doing both sides of it. You're doing the hardware and the software. Yeah. Windows, sorry, guys. I mean, the Windows PC market is 2/3 the size it used to be. Even at its height, it would be approximately 1/5 the size of the smartphone market. Like, it's even if we could go back to the magical days of 2011, take that market share, bring it down to 2020, and compare it to what's going on in the smartphone space, it would still be the smallest platform. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just... As far as not understanding Microsoft and how they compare to Apple, Microsoft is pragmatically going to where their customers are. They're not trying to induce them to buy their hardware and jump onto Windows. I mean, a lot of them are on Windows, and that's great, and they'll support that, of course. A lot of them on our iPads or Macs or whatever they're using, Android devices, they're going to support them there too, you know?
Yep. And then hope they go to the cloud, right? Like, so you always have to remember what's Microsoft's priority now. It's not Windows. It's not Windows anymore. And so they're going to ride the Windows Wintel train as long as they can. And then they're already positioned for their next thing, which is make cross-platform apps and then take people to the cloud. That's it.
God help us. If they bought ARM, they would buy it so they could make ARM-based chipsets for their data centers. They wouldn't be doing this.
That's their future. Future is in Windows. I mean, we know that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I know, but people resist, right? We hear from these people every day on Twitter, on our sites. I mean, I hope they won't. Why won't they ship Duo? This is the beginning of the turnaround. And it's like, guys, you gotta rein it in a little bit.
Okay? Nope.
Hardware is not a big, good margin business for them.
No, not at all.
Look at services, man. Services, where even Apple wants to do services. I know.
Yeah.
All right, but Leo,
that's where they can
said,
clean up.
You said you agreed with him, so I'm curious.
No, I don't agree. I don't agree that Microsoft has to respond, but I think that it remains to be seen. I mean, there's a lot of question marks still, but what the potential for what Apple could do with a fully integrated hardware and software stack, custom chips designed specifically for the uses, you know, that they need to be designed for, really means they could make hardware that is nothing like a PC. Right now, they're making PCs.
They're easing the transition.
They're making PCs. You can run Windows on a Mac. You can wipe the hard drive and run Windows on it. It runs fine because it's off-the-shelf PC software, hardware, essentially. So, and that's why when they made an Ultrabook, when they made the MacBook Air, everybody in the PC industry said, great, we'll make one too.
Right.
The potential is here for...
People can't copy.
They can't copy it. And I don't think that the PC business is a great business necessarily. But I do think that Apple will have the will kind of have a hardware stack that is very difficult to compete with from the watch all the way up to workstations. It'll be very hard.
I mean, they kind of already do, but this will make it even better.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so what I think it shakes Intel. I don't see where Intel's future lies, to be honest with you. I don't think the server market is going to stay with Intel.
Yeah, so I here's my guess for Intel. They move slow. You know, they are the Microsoft of hardware in some ways. But they have shown in the past, and they're starting to show it with this kind of thing as well, their ability to adapt to what's happening out in the market. And so I suspect what we're going to see from Intel is a switch in their own architecture to something that resembles ARM, big cores and little cores and more efficient and so forth. But right now, I mean, more than half of their revenues comes from data centers. And that's really where the big hit's going to be. It's not Apple going ARM or, you know, Windows going ARM. It's going to be when data centers go ARM. And that is actually – that's a legitimate concern. I would say there is a much – no, in fact, it's a certainty. Data centers will almost certainly be largely ARM, whereas Windows-based PCs, at least, unless something really changes, there's just no reason to bother.
So, right. So – I still stand by my earlier prediction that as these existing PCs age out over the next 5 to 10 years, companies are going to – we're already looking at this. We can do this. Looking at thin clients operating on servers in Azure, for instance, or somewhere else. You know, we're going to put our edit machines in the rack here and then have thin clients so that work from home just furthers that. So that our editors can work from home on the servers here. So I think that that's really the future of PC. So what I think Issei is saying is not inaccurate. This thing that we think of as Wintel, Windows PCs running on Intel hardware, its days are numbered, even if Apple hadn't done this.
Yeah.
I was going to say, technically speaking, the smartphone explosion, the mobile wave, or whatever you want to call that, has already killed Wintel as a concern anyway. Yeah. I mean,
this just hastens.
Like I said, the smartphone market alone is many times the size of the PC market, and Intel has zero share of this market.
So the real question is where would a Windows Intel machine, who's going to be buying those in the next 5 years? Where do they make sense still? There'll be a legacy market. Of course.
Well, businesses, which are still big, a big market. And then, the profitable part is the thing we've talked about before, the premium PC market for creators, game players, and those kinds, engineers, architects, that scientific, et cetera, that kind of thing. Developers. We talked about this possibility before, the next 12 months or whatever it is, we're going to see iPhone and iPad apps running natively on an Apple Silicon Mac.
Right.
And that's going to be amazing.
Right. Mm.
The year after that is the more interesting to me because what happens when Mac software runs on an iPad Pro?
Right.
When you take it's an incredible ecosystem. Video editing software or their Xcode software that writes apps. Like once you can make apps on it, you can develop software on it.
Yes.
And I don't mean with like the Swift Playgrounds nonsense that they have on the iPad. I mean actual programming environments. Then that thing is, then it replaces a computer for sure.
I just think the lines will be blurred. It's a continuum now.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
I think the fundamental point Gassé is making, it's not Microsoft's going to start making ARM chips. That part's, I agree with you. That's nuts.
Yeah.
They don't need to do that.
Or rushing to fix Windows on ARM. I'm like, yeah, if they could, they'd like to.
How long do you think Microsoft will be in the hardware business at all?
I think businesses are buying Surfaces like to some degree. So as long as they can use it as kind of a premium device that helps influence what other OEMs do, I don't see them getting out of it at all.
Yeah, no, it's not like Surface is not a failure by any measure. I mean, the Duo is important for one reason, because I don't think it's a particularly compelling device, and it's not because we're going to find out how much people like two screens. This is Microsoft's first Android device. I mean, that itself is to me is the most fascinating thing here.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like Mary Jo said, the goal is to get people running Microsoft services in the cloud. And
right.
Microsoft doesn't care what kind of device that works.
They don't care.
I don't see this happening, but again, I could picture Panos Panay and Surface believing it's possible. If they could influence the hardware market on the Android side, like they have the PC market on the Windows side. They could potentially be the inspiration for some kind of a future set of device types that are new that run Android. You know, like they legitimatize. I know that's not a word. They made legitimate this tablet that can replace the laptop form factor with Surface Pro. I think that device is in many ways as iconic as the MacBook Air. They need to do something like that with Android, because Android is decidedly lacking when it comes to tablets, two-in-ones, or they have these Chromebook things that this seem to be going nowhere. You can't cede the entire premium market to Apple.
Do you think the successor to Surface Duo would be a tablet, like the next Android device Microsoft does more of a tablet?
It's hard because they don't control the software.
Right.
The big problem, anyone who's used an Android tablet can tell you this. You still see a lot of phone apps stretched up to a bigger screen, like it's garbage.
Yeah.
And I would say, just based on my own experience, an iPhone version of an app is better, materially better than the Android version.
That's correct.
You get to a tablet, it's exponentially better.
It's not even close.
It's a huge problem. Now, Microsoft, though... You know, we talked about here's an ARM-based PC. It's only running Microsoft software. And you said correctly, for a lot of people, that's enough. Well, what if you could do that on Android? So you have Office,
right?
Teams, right? Edge.
Remember, they tried to do that with Samsung. Remember, they had that bundling deal with Office 365 with Samsung on tablets and I think on phones.
They have to do it themselves, because Samsung's going to push Samsung. Yeah. You know, Microsoft is a folder on a Samsung device. On a Microsoft device, you have a Microsoft launcher. You get the Microsoft software pre-installed. You get their keyboard, their browser, their search engine. It's a Microsoft device. It has to have the Google Play Store. It's not viable. And their software has to be optimized for that form factor. And a Surface Pro that runs Android, I could see that being the next one, sure. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot more sense than a Surface Neo does, or a Surface Duo.
So Surface Go Android Edition.
Maybe.
Maybe.
No, who wants that? I don't want that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say Surface.
I know. I'm like, who's the audience? I don't know. But who buys Android tablets now? That I also don't know. So
people who are cheap.
Yeah.
That's it. And with a $300 iPad available, you'd have to be really cheap. Like,
you have to be pretty cheap, right?
I mean, you have to actively hate Apple in some visceral way that you can't explain logically.
Because the iPad
is such a better.
I don't have an Android tablet, but.
Yeah, you're not that crazy.
No, not that crazy.
There's a lot. I mean, don't forget that Amazon's Fire tablets are also Android.
Amazon Android.
Yeah. Those are terrible.
But they sell them. And why do they sell them? Because they're cheap. They sell
them. And also, some phone companies have giveaways with Android tablets when you buy a phone, right?
The real question is, would it be possible? See, all of these things can be solved if you could run
Windows, and you could, you know, and on Azure, and I could run Windows 7, 8, 9, 10. I could do whatever compatibility legacy I want software I wanted to run safely, securely in the cloud on a thin client, maybe a client made by, I don't think it's out of the question to be a Surface.
Well, by the way, that would absolutely be part of this. Of course it would, because there will be, in Microsoft's case, businesses who say, look, I'd like to do something like this. It'd be simpler.
Yeah.
It'd be cheaper, et cetera. But we have this legacy app that we need. And they would say, put it up in Windows Virtual Desktop. You can pass the app down to your device.
So all of that's doable, right? I mean, that's not... And it's safer, right? It's simpler. It's managed.
Yeah. I mean, and one of their big audiences, they want are first-line workers. So those are the people who would have those cheap kind of thin client slash tablet thing.
There are analogs to this situation. I mean, in the early days, if you wanted a website, you would run your own server. But you'd be nuts to do that today. You run a managed server because they're professionals who run it for you.
These Windows line of business apps are going to be like the 21st century version of COBOL apps, you know, in Y2K.
They're never going
away. They're the cockroaches of the internet. They're never going to go away. Every corporation out there, every Fortune 500 company has from one to a dozen apps that were written in VB5 or in some nonsense back in the 1990s. Yeah. And they're like, we just can't give it up.
Good news. You can run it on Azure. And you can run it at performant, securely. And, oh, by the way, if you want to work from home today, you could use your crappy old PC at home or your Android tablet, and it looks exactly the same.
I think the thing that has to happen to make this more real is the price has to come way down, and the way Microsoft licenses WBD has to change, right?
So we need pervasive 5G or 6G networking everywhere, you know. So that Flex 5G that I just mentioned, as its name suggests, has a 5G SIM in it. I live in Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter that I live in rural Pennsylvania in this case. I could live in the middle of Philadelphia. There is no Verizon 5G in Pennsylvania anywhere. I'd have to go to New York City. It would be the closest place. Rich Woods, who writes for NeoWin, a friend of ours, also got one of these devices to review. And where he lives, I want to say it's probably out in Long Island somewhere, I think. He also doesn't have 5G, but he can hop on the train and go into New York City. And he did that. And he took a screenshot of the net speed test that he got on this thing in downtown Manhattan. Download speed was 711 megabits per second.
Can't wait.
Now, here in Pennsylvania, on my cable connection, my fastest possible speed is 330 megabits per second. So here he is untethered out in the world with a laptop getting over double. That's not even as fast as it can go. It's just the one.
But honestly, what do you need that goes faster than 300 megabits? What do you do that you need more than
nothing.
That?
But the point of it is I want it everywhere. You know, like you know, when we first got PCs, you went into a special room. It was tied to the wall. You used it, you know. And now you can kind of go around the house. You can leave the house. You know, the next step for this is the connectivity thing. And I think what puts the availability of remote apps over the top is literally pervasive connectivity. You need to be able to access that app from anywhere as if it were natively running on the device. And 5G plus, I think, will – actually, 4G would do it too, honestly. But if it was just pervasively available everywhere, right, so that it was confusing. Like, you ever run an app on your computer and it doesn't start, and you're like, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of futz with it a little bit or whatever. It needs to be like that, you know? Like, it's unusual that this thing doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And, I mean, we're already testing this with things like Stadia and xCloud, where we're running very demanding software off servers, and the client doesn't matter.
God, we used to go on business trips, and this is probably 15 years ago-ish. You know, I would go through this ritual where I would copy my podcasts that I was listening to, my music library, some selection of videos that I wanted to watch on a laptop so that, you know, God help me, if I was ever out in the world and needed to entertain myself 2 seconds, I wouldn't be bored, you know? And it was stupid, but... You know, now, of course, with phones, you kind of walk. You know, people, we've switched these.
You don't need Microsoft briefcase anymore.
Yeah, I stream in my car to my phone, and it comes out of the speakers in the car. You know, apps can be like that, too.
Yeah. That's really an important point, because for a long time, people say, oh, no, I have to have my music on my device. Yeah. No, I have to, you know, I have to download, I have to sync it.
And the whole, it's like, why?
Yeah. Not anymore. I don't think. The thing is, people who remember that still think that way. So that's the problem with these mindsets. They don't change. But a young person, like my kid, your kid, they don't download stuff onto their phone. No. They listen to Spotify.
Yep.
So I think that that's going to change. It's going to take a while because there's plenty of businesses out there who are still running Windows 7 on, and their dental management software is on there, and they'll be damned if they'll ever replace it. But at some point, that computer is going to die. And when that happens four or five years from now, it might be reasonable for them to say, oh, I could get a $400 thin client and have services in the cloud. And you know Microsoft wants
that. By the way, that would be the safe place to run that stupid thing that you do. The app my dentist uses is very clearly a Visual Basic application running on Windows 7. It's a combination of all the wrong technologies.
Yes.
And they can't take care of it. It's not like they must have they probably pay someone, to make sure it's as secure as it can be and so
that's
forth.
That's where the other resistance is going to come from. Is MSPs who say, "Oh no, we better keep it this way. This is my lifeblood."
Microsoft's been dealing with it since Office 365 appeared.
I really want to sell this package.
Yeah, we're still going to offer small business services for those businesses. When was the last time you heard about that thing? it's gone.
I for one think this is a great future. Satya Nadella has been preparing for this for 6 years. This is the future he wants to move to. It's a great way for Microsoft to make money. They can't. I mean, maybe Surface is a $1 billion business. Maybe
it's like $2 billion, we don't even know if it makes money. We don't even know that.
That's just revenue. Right? We don't know if they're.
By the way, we know that it doesn't, because if it ever had, we would have heard about it.
they would say it was in the black. They would, and they never have said that.
Yeah, not even once.
So why do they even do it?
Well, to influence the market, right? Yeah.
And I'm not being facetious. I mean, it's an investment, right? In the market surrounding Windows, they're trying to. They literally designed this thing so that PC makers would copy it and make PCs better.
So it's a reference architecture.
Yes. I mean, when they came out with Media Center PC. Remember back in the day? They were like, look, they're like, look, it'll be beautiful. It'll be like a piece of stereo equipment. Yeah. You slide it into your component system. It's going to be awesome. And then they came out and they were like towers. Yeah. And it's like, what is someone going to do with a tower
what
PC
happened?
In their living room? HP, No, because that's what they were getting. It happened with tablet PCs. Yeah. It happened with Media Center PCs. And it was, and when they got to Windows 8, they were like, guys, we're doing multi-touch. Like, we need you to actually do
get
this.
On board
always
connected right yeah they've yeah. They've had to use their own hardware to say, look, this can work. And I'll tell you, you guys know I looked at a lot of different PCs before I bought the laptop 3, and I think they finally, after 3 tries, figured out how to make a really beautiful functional machine.
Mary Jo, if you could run Notepad in the cloud though. Which, by the way, you really could.
I can.
You could. And then you could have devices, a variety of devices to fit your busy lifestyle. And they all log into the same Notepad.
Yeah. I would love it. Notepad.exe, I would love it because
never has to die.
Yep.
No, if I could carry in my purse a really small, thin client that was functional and had a good keyboard that I could attach or fold
all
up
you need
or whatever.
Is a screen and a keyboard and connectivity.
I don't need a full PC. I don't need one.
You're a perfect example.
How much would you pay every month for Notepad as a service? What's the cutoff point for you?
Well, so I would pay a lot if that was the way to use Notepad, but
they'd never sell it that way though. They'd sell
what I don't want Notepad to turn into is Office 365, where they're adding new features constantly. I want it to stay as it is. If you could sell me Notepad as a service that never was updated except for security, I would be more interested in that.
That's what I do. I exercise Emacs as a service, but I love it. I have my Emacs server running and down the hall, and I can log into it from anywhere. By the way, the other good thing about this is Apple does not want this to be in this business at all. So you're not going to see Apple running around making these sexy thin clients because they couldn't,
they don't want to be in that business, right?
They couldn't sell enough. They couldn't sell them for enough. This is, that's a, that is a, you know, that is a
cutthroat business. Yeah. That is
low margin crap. Is. You know, plastic business.
Yeah, you'll be buying.
No, you don't want to make one of those. Remember Google trying to make the super expensive premium Chromebook that because they were like, some people want that beautiful device. I'm like, yeah, do they?
I have one right here. And when's the last time I opened it? Right. Yeah. I do think, though, that Apple doesn't mind because Apple has this continuum and they're going to always have a device. Their next thing is going to be glasses. They're going to have a device in this. This is going to be a continuum of hardware. And if you need a high end video editing machine, they'll have it. That's a small business. It's a tiny business, but the but the cachet Apple gets from it is huge, and so I think
it's used by Hollywood and
It's a great product strategy. So then people buy Apple. You see Apple watches everywhere. You see Apple glasses everywhere. You'll see iPhones everywhere. You might see tablets or laptops of various kinds. They'll make a lot of interesting form factors. The only thing Apple's not good at. And it's the one thing that Microsoft and the OEMs and Android makers are good at is choice.
Yeah.
Apple, by necessity, can only really make a few different things. And so Apple's kind of moda is we choose for you. This is what you really want.
And you're going to want this. And we know what's best for you.
It comes in three colors. That's it.
And that's it. And if you don't like those.
It's pink this week. Yeah. So it's pink.
But, and that's the one thing we might lose if we don't have this vibrant Windows OEM ecosystem is you can get a PC like anything you want.
I think that will always exist for the people that want it. And whether you want Windows or Linux or whatever, I mean, I think there'll always be alternatives. And Windows 10 certainly has its problems. We just spent half an hour on some of those problems. But I mean, it's a mature, full-featured, operate. It works great. I mean, there's all kinds of software development stuff and rich applications and, it's all there. So, it's not going away, but it's...
But that's what got us started. Wintel... Yeah,
it's not the mainstream.
Intel's on life support. Windows, neither one of these has much of a future. These are legacy technologies, right? That's really what he's saying.
My horse works great. I don't want to hear about your superhighway.
And really, the last place Intel can still sell chips is to servers, but their power profile's terrible.
I know. This is what's going to kill Intel. It's going to be the data center.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God AMD's doing well these days because they can pick up
AMD
the slack
is a boutique. AMD is the artisanal pickle maker. They should be in Brooklyn in a warehouse
they should.
Of bricks because they're
they all have Jacob's like goatees. And, yeah.
I'm glad they exist. I love Jacob's pickles. But that's not going to change the universe.
That's good. Yeah, that is
AMD sauerkraut. It's a specialty item, but some people want it.
64 different spices.
Yeah, spicy mustard, pickles, and you make a great IPA.
Actually,
now we're talking.
The beer market might be a good analogy for this, except people always drink beer, so that's a terrible analogy. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like this is fine. This is the future. This is how it should be. Yeah. And Apple has found a great role for itself. And guess what? Microsoft has found a great role for itself. The only company that really it's hard to imagine a future for is Intel.
I know. They really are kind of the odd man out because Microsoft has made this transition to the cloud and Intel kind of hasn't,
But what Microsoft did is unusual to the point where it's a case study.
Oh, yeah. It will be studied. Yeah,
They pivoted. Right. Yep. Wow. They did it and it worked. Wow.
And they knew they had to. Like their backs were against the wall. Right. Once Google apps started coming out, they're like, you know what? We got to do something with Office.
Yep.
They should have been Bethlehem Steel, the rotting hulk of their infrastructure rotting, or sitting out there in the landscape and making it ugly. But they didn't. They, like Leo said, they pivoted. And it's going to be studied. There's no doubt about it.
Brilliant. I can't think of another case.
I don't think Intel's going to do it. Intel's going to do it.
They may be like IBM. IBM survives because they have a lot of patents. And
a lot of legacy customers still too.
So they'll probably be like, I don't think they'll go away, but
software makers have legacy customers. Hardware makers don't.
Right.
These guys, they don't sell devices to individuals. They sell chips to go inside things. Like They could be replaced. They are being
replaced. No, I was thinking mainframes when I said that.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's not Intel. That's, yeah, I don't know. I would hate to be in charge of Intel right now. It's hard to imagine what the way forward would be.
They need to buy ARM.
Have you got? No, maybe they will. I don't think if they. Right.
Seriously, if they're serious about being in business, what they need is ARM architecture.
Well, that is one of the scenarios GSA talks about, right?
Intel of Intel's fabs, though, say they were going to start building ARM?
Intel
they
had did, an right? ARM business. It was called Xscale. Remember that? When they were going to be in mobile phones everywhere?
Yep.
That worked out.
Yeah, but at least their 5G business is going strong.
Actually, you know what? This is a pivot you could make, Intel. Mm-hmm. We need U.S.-made network architecture. Nobody wants to buy Huawei 5G. Yeah. Everybody's terrified of Chinese made.
God, they just sold off their networking business.
Damn.
I know, that's an interesting point.
Darn it!
Just missed it.
They could be. They could be like the new Ford Bronco has got this kind of a neat legacy vibe, but it's a modern vehicle. I mean, they could try to do something like that with networking.
Yeah.
Intel inside. We have Intel. Intel is inside the wire.
Ding, 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 ding.
Like the new modem sound every time your phone rings.
Modems. Yeah. They can make modems. You know?
Yeah.
There's got to be a business there. So do you have on your laptop 3, do you have 2004 yet, Mary Jo Foley?
Nope.
Okay.
No one does. Anybody? No one does. Nope. It's been waiting to get it through Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people listening to this probably have it because they just installed it. And they'll tell you it's working fine, and I'm sure it is.
Yep. But remember I said last week, every day I start my day pretty much by saying, Microsoft, hey, like, what's up with Surface Laptop 3 and Surface Pro 7 not getting 2004? Finally, I got an indirect answer. They changed the wording of their KB article, and they added, please note, if there are no other safeguards that affect your device, you'll get 2004 on these. So that means there must be other things that are affecting those devices besides the always on, always connected bug. And like Paul said earlier in the show, we don't know what those are because Microsoft doesn't elaborate on why you can't get a certain update. They just say your device isn't quite ready yet. That's it.
I feel like we're overdue on a John Cable post explaining how everything is going exactly as they thought.
I know. It's been a while since we had one of those, and I'm like, when are they going to put it out? It must be soon. Maybe they'll wait till they finally fix this.
The show would be the ideal time.
Or they'll wait till they finally fix the Surface Laptop 3 and Pro 7 and say, see, look, everything's perfect. The part we don't know, and I can't get an answer to you, is why.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Why did we not know about this before 2004 started rolling out? I don't know. People keep asking me that on Twitter. They're like, so wait, why didn't we know about this before? Didn't they know?
The Insider program can't even write a blog post. What makes you think they can deploy software?
All right. No, that's the one question now that's plaguing me because I'm like, people must have tested this. They must have known this was a problem. Why didn't they? I'm not saying why didn't they stop the rollout. I'm just saying why didn't they acknowledge it in the notes somewhere before it started rolling out. That's all. It's a simple request, really.
You're a little thing to ask. Unreasonable.
I'm not being unreasonable.
It's a small thing.
I know. Yeah. So, if you don't have it yet on those devices, also, if you don't have it on the Surface Book 2, 3, the Pro X,
Surface Go 2,
which I hear people still have it. We don't know why. We don't know why, but they're holding it because something is not going to work well if you get it. That's all we know. This will be a new weekly feature on Windows Weekly.
What's wrong with my PC?
Where is it?
Where is 2004?
Where is
Waldo?
Where is it?
It's like a Where's Waldo poster, but it's all computers. You have to point out the ones that have 2004.
Exactly. Yeah.
So bizarre. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's such a mystery.
It is strange.
Yeah. Just a mystery.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Well, I just thought I'd ask. PC sales are up.
Yeah. Thank you, COVID. temporary bump. I think
everybody went
Gardner
home,
called it a short-term recovery. Yeah. People got home, discovered they didn't have a computer to work on. PC sales jumped about 7%. That's using numbers averaged between Gartner and IDC. One of the two had a much higher jump, and one of the two had a much smaller jump. But basically 68.5 million units sold, up from 64 million.
See, I've been proven wrong within the space of a single podcast.
Well, 64 million sounds like a lot of zeros, but and it is. But, you know, again, compared to smartphones and stuff, it's tiny. Lenovo and HP were basically neck and neck for the first spot. I put Lenovo first, 17.1 million units compared to 16.8 for HP. And then Dell, Apple, and Acer round out the top five.
See, you can't give up on Wintel. Look at all those PCs still being
sold. Well, they could be running Linux. Let's not get out of control.
Oh, come on.
I mean, 7.29% of them are running Mac OS.
Oh, that's in the it's in the count. Mm-hmm. That counts as a PC. Oh, I didn't know that. All right.
Yeah.
What is your prediction for when Apple, let's say this time next year, when Apple's kind of firing on all
their market share is
silicon. Yeah.
So what is it now? 7? It's 7% now?
Yeah.
And that's, by the way, that's 8. Up year over year. They actually had a big
I think you're right. It's not going to be a huge amount.
Success for them needs to be measured double digits. Like they need, if they can hit 10,
that would be huge. Yeah. I don't know if they've ever
been. That would be giant if they could. Yeah. It would.
Because they're just one company. They're not,
I'll tell you, whenever they put out that first ARM-based MacBook Air or whatever, that quarter is going to be a bonanza for Mac sales. I bet they're going to have one of the best quarters they've ever had.
Well, the rumor is that will be this year. That'll be in the next few months. Yeah.
Like I think that's going to be, that one quarter will be explosive.
Might be very interesting.
This might be a really dumb question, but I'm not an Apple ecosystem person. Why can't they have OEMs? Why not?
Oh, they could.
They did. Then Steve
Jobs came back now?
And they said
why
no.
So Bill Gates infamously, tried to convince John Sculley to do this in the 1980s. He wanted them to license them. Imagine that. I mean, the guy who made Windows, right? But I think this is before Windows became Windows, but he wanted them to do it. I think John Sculley, I don't know if he left. I think he might have, he wasn't fired, but he was asked to leave. But part of it might have been, basically. But I think it was because he refused to do this.
Really?
Right. So, yeah. And then the guy who succeeded him was, Schindler?
Yeah, Mike Schindler. I believe he was the guy that opened it up.
Yeah. So Schindler would have been the guy that opened it up to
the compatible
parties, right?
And that was—I'll tell you—that was the experience that keeps Apple from doing it ever again, because you can't control quality.
Yeah,
but what if they only allowed like people they really trusted they and said these two other OEMs can do it? That's it.
Yeah, that's Apple, sometime in the next 30 days, is going to become literally the biggest company on earth. There is no reason for them to do what we're describing. Like there's just no advantage to it. I mean,
that's true.
If the Mac doubled in size, literally doubled, like what would that do to their revenues? It would be a blip, you know. It would be a good blip, but it would be.
No, you're right, because it's all about the iPhone. Yeah.
Yeah, this is not the future for them. So
that's true.
It's not going to happen.
It just made me kind of think out loud, like, so why don't they? If they're, they're going to turn.
They did briefly. What were those companies' names? Like Power Max or something?
I can't remember.
Oh, Motorola did one. Motorola was one of the licensees.
There were a lot of them.
Star Max or something.
It was not a good experience.
There was one company that was really good. Remember they used to drive the Humvees around Macworld in San Francisco? They had kind of like a guerrilla warfare thing going on.
That's funny. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of the company, but.
Okay. I just passing thought, since they're starting Steve a Jobs new era stuff. With ARM.
That's stinking thinking. That's Windows thinking. That's the kind of thinking you'd come up with if you were in Redmond.
A Windows person.
Windows person.
You know, somebody who wants choice, somebody who likes having options.
It's not about choice. It's about domination.
Is that
it's about owning the market and every
domination.
Well, if you think about it, really,
Mortal Kombat domination,
dominate. Isn't that in really what Apple is all about? They
They want to control every. That's the whole reason they're making their own chips.
Yeah, they want to control it. Every I know, right? They want to control the complete end-to-end experience.
Completely and utterly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I just want to put icons where I want them on a home screen. That's all I'm asking.
No,
you know?
No.
Exactly. Like some basic small things, you know?
Yeah, it's a little thing, but it would make
you can choose your own browser and email client going forward with them, can't
yes,
you?
Right, right.
Yes.
Finally.
Supposedly, yeah. Supposedly.
I don't think it's in the UI yet, but yeah, that's coming.
That's coming.
Mm-hmm. Good. It's a step, you know, small step.
A little bit. But. Little tiny steps. Yeah, no, that's not Apple. Apple is... I own it all.
I want control.
Every bit
of it. I know.
Sure.
Yeah.
It seems to be working okay for them.
But on the other hand, could you ever see Apple adding millions of new features for Outlook? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No.
Who I think can it was even just keep a week ago.
Right. Well, remember they introduced a bunch of features for Teams. And yeah. I was like, look at these guys. They actually said when these features would arrive. It was really clear cut. I thought, man, they'd really turned a new leaf over there. And then this happened.
Yeah. So, yeah, Microsoft did this big announcement yesterday where they said, we've got all these new features coming to Outlook. And so, of course, your first question is, which Outlook do you mean? Yeah. Do you mean Outlook, the Exchange client? Do you mean Outlook on iOS, Outlook on Android? Do you mean Outlook on the web? And so if you look
Windows,
at their blog post
Mac,
yesterday,
Outlook.com.
Say
seven much. Of them, I think.
Yeah, there's at least seven different things
it's
called
Angel
Outlook.
Legion.
Yeah,
or it's I guess Target Platforms Legion.
Seven exactly. is there's seven different Outlooks.
At least seven different Outlooks.
So which were these features for?
All different things. So Outlook web apps. Some were for iOS. Some for Android.
Sigh.
Yeah.
It tilted very heavily to Android Outlook on the web. I would
it
say.
Did.
I think that was the
it
number
did.
One.
I would say
which
so.
Is the commercial version of Microsoft 365.
Yes. So the one thing to keep in mind about all of this is what Microsoft's trying to do. Their holy grail is try to bring parity and features to all these different outlooks to the extent that you can. So if you see them adding something like now you can have meetings insights and Outlook for iOS and Outlook web app, it means it's probably already somewhere else and exists somewhere else.
That's right.
Right.
Which, by the way, they don't mention usually in this post. There was once or twice they said, oh, this was already available in the iOS version or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I applaud their effort to make all the Outlooks similar to the extent that they can be. But we're in a period right now where this is very chaotic because when they announce a new feature, they don't usually tell you which version of Outlook it is. And people always want to know that because they're like, so I can use it on my Android device, right? No, actually, this isn't for that. This is not for that. This is for the Win32 version of Outlook.
Right.
So, yeah. But if you are an Outlook user, you should go and check out Paul's post or my post or both where we talk about all of these features and which platform they're on. We're not going to try to explain that here because it would take us a few hours.
I did hear from someone on Twitter who said that most of the features they announced are actually already available.
They are already available and somewhere in one of the Outlook platforms.
I see.
There's nothing that is brand new in the announcement they made yesterday, as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I wasted 45 minutes of my life writing that post, but.
Oh, man. I spent hours. Like, this was me. I actually took a piece of paper and a pen, and I made a grid on a piece of paper. And I was like, okay, this is here already. This is here. This is not here. That's how I had to do that post yesterday because
there's hysterical.
So many different
it's unreal.
Kinds of. If I had a whiteboard, I guess I could have done it on my digital whiteboard, perhaps, but I did not. Paper and pen sometimes is the right way to go deciphering Microsoft.
You know what you need? You need table support and notepad.
That's what I do need. Yeah. I could have used Excel.
Markup, you could do
it. I could have used Excel, you guys, but you know, could have.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, indeed.
Well.
So let's talk about the cloud. That's the future.
All right. Is it? Yeah, I guess it is.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah.
This is past? This first thing is something Mary Jo and I discussed at length yesterday privately because we were trying to figure out what, if anything, was actually new.
I know.
And what did we decide it was? It's one thing, right?
One thing, I think. So anybody who knows Citrix, you know that Microsoft and Citrix have been partners for literally 2 decades.
Yeah.
And a question we get very often is, when is Microsoft just going to buy Citrix? Well, they haven't bought them in 2 decades. So my guess is they're not going to buy them, maybe because the price is too high.
I was convinced they had dirt on Bill Gates. Like, how did Microsoft not just pummel this company into the ground?
I know.
And they keep partnering with them. It's crazy.
I know.
Like, they both sell exactly the same thing.
Virtualization products, right? Yeah.
They're exactly the same.
So, yeah, they're sort of the same. But there are a lot of Microsoft customers who extend Microsoft's products with Citrix because they have some features that Microsoft doesn't have, and they need those specific features. So yesterday, what they announced was a renewal of their 20-year partnership.
Wow.
And, announced again that Azure is their preferred cloud platform. They've already announced that before.
God, they love each other.
They love each other.
It's so weird.
Windows Virtual Desktop. Yeah, we're working with them on that. We already knew that. So there's some minor updates to their announcement around how they're going to go to market with their tools and how they're going to try to get Citrix on-prem customers to Microsoft's cloud. But all you need to know is Microsoft's not buying Citrix and they're still BFFs. That's the end.
Does Citrix run on Azure? Is there a cloud hosted version of Citrix that runs on Azure?
So Citrix software runs on Azure. It also runs on AWS and Google Cloud. They're very agnostic about this.
Right. So one of the things you look for in this announcement in particular, but all their announcements, is they'll say things like, Citrix is a preferred partner.
Exactly.
The preferred, every one of
Adobe's the same way, right?
Qualified that way. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Adobe is very tight with Microsoft on Azure, but Adobe still works with other clouds too, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll never understand this relationship. I'll never understand it.
Yeah.
This goes back to terminal services and what it was.
But didn't Citrix,
Intifa, there was a terminal service.
OS2. That was IBM. And that's what happened. Ed Iacobucci was at IBM.
Ed Iacobucci,
I think there was even some code sharing going on in the early days, I think.
But the old canard was that Ed Iacobucci wrote Windows NT.
I know. You used to hear that all the time.
Yeah, intimately connected.
They know something. They know where the bodies are buried.
Somebody from Microsoft wrote OS 2. I don't know.
Like Dave Cutler shipped him with a knife in the kitchen.
The early OS 2 Windows intertwined history was very cool and fascinating.
Long lost in the mists of time.
Yes.
We don't really know if that's just, what people were saying but it was widely said.
It was a good story.
Dvorak always used to say that. And Ed was a friend. Ed's passed away not so long ago, but Ed was a friend. And, I should have asked him when I could have had the chance.
Hey, you probably say, I have to take this to the grave.
You have a treasure map that can tell us where the bodies are?
Did you really write NT? Would you looking over Dave Cutler's shoulder and say, you know what would be great? What if you put...
We're going to hear from Dave Cutler now. You watch.
Dave Cutler.
You didn't like that, huh?
No, he wouldn't like that.
I don't think he had any help. Well, I mean, he had lots of help.
No, he didn't have any help. He wrote the whole thing in his in his garage.
That's how it was done. I wrote it in Quick Basic. That's why it was so slow.
It was a proof of concept. Microsoft is... now you had the layoff story. We didn't even mention that yet. Is that happening? Yeah. What's the deal with that?
So, we talked about this last week. At the start of Microsoft's new fiscal, which was July 1, there's always reorgs. There's always some layoffs, right? We know that there was a big sales reorg. I wrote some details about this on my site this week, and they are creating a new separate consulting arm at Microsoft. And so, as part of this whole moving everybody around, some salespeople are going to be let go. Some marketing people are going to be let go. And other people in other divisions, you know, there's always some attrition at this time of year. But I'm still not hearing it's a lot.
It's not, yeah, mass layoffs. I heard from a friend about some layoffs in the Azure group even. But yeah. I this is not the year to be laying off a lot of people when you're a big tech company.
Right.
And Microsoft just did the right thing with all their retail employees. It'd be kind of an awkward thing to pull those guys into the fold and lay off a bunch of other people. So there's always going to be some because of the time of year.
Yeah. They are laying off MSN editors. GeekWire has more on that this week. Remember, there was news about that.
They said they were going to do that. They were going to go away from humans entirely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they are doing that and laying off some of those people. But from what I heard this week, a number, I don't know if everybody is being offered a chance to try to find another job in the company, but some people are. So, yeah, there are layoffs. And I'm not saying that's great or like, oh, there's only a few, so it's fine. I'm not saying that, but it's better than it was a couple of years ago.
This is probably the lightest year we've seen in years.
Yeah.
This kind of thing, for sure.
Me too. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there have been some devastating layoffs.
There may be like hundreds. Yeah. Total across the company, which is not small, but comparatively,
so
again,
it's not. What are they doing at MSN? What do they do? Take all the robots that used to build cars because they don't have jobs anymore, and now they're doing news at MSN? Is that what's happening?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Somebody has to, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Maybe that creepy chatbot will be doing it.
Yeah. This was very interesting to me too. So in China, Microsoft has this chatbot. It's called Chow Ice, which is a roughly translated little Bing. So this is their good chatbot.
It's good.
This was not Tay, right? This wasn't the one that was doing the racist comments.
Right.
This is the one in China that was very, very successful.
Little Bing. They love him.
Little Bing. Yep. So Microsoft is spinning off the work that they've been doing with Chow Ice and creating a separate company, but they're going to invest in the company. And this company is going to create commercial products. It doesn't really say what, but going to create commercial products using this Microsoft social chatbot as part of the technology inside.
Is it going to be Chow Ice Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah, that must be it.
Grouping it as 5.0.
Yeah. It was interesting because we hadn't heard anything on Chow Ice in a while. And then suddenly it's like, oh, they're spinning it out. You know, maybe to save money. I don't know. Or maybe because it's, you know, when it was the end of the fiscal year and Amy Hood was going through the list, like, oh, do we need this? No, Chow.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Interesting.
It's just kind of odd to hear that name again. Chow Ice, by the way, was doing a lot of things way before, well, and things that Cortana still can't do, like the full duplex conversation where you say something to it and then it responds and you have like a semi-normal conversation with it. That already exists in that technology, but has not made it into Cortana. Hmm.
Interesting.
And I think a little Xbox would be nice.
Very
we have an event coming up, don't we? Or do we already have that?
Yeah, next Thursday, maybe.
To get up early, is there a game? Like 7 a.m. On Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah. What should I be looking for? Anything exciting? You're joining me, aren't you, Paul?
I think so, yeah. I think we talked about doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to be.
Sorry,
this is like
you
want to
join us, Mary
preview.
Jo? You could do it. We'd have Mary Jo Foley in it.
No, when is it though? I just am trying to look at my
23rd.
Calendar.
I believe it's next Thursday.
Yeah, week from Thursday. Week from tomorrow. Is that right?
No.
Yeah. It's 23rd at 7 a.m.
7 a.m.
My time. 10 a.m. Your time.
I'm gonna let the professionals handle this one.
Oh, but it'd be fun. You could just say that looks stupid. That's dumb.
Right.
Why would you want to do that?
There's going to be some Halo.
Do people actually play this game? It'd be fun.
Yeah. No, guys, I'm leaving it in your capable gaming hands.
I'll leave it with
you,
dateless wonders.
Get a life. Get outside and get some fresh air. It'd be yeah. really fun if you were doing that. It'd be really fun.
Sure.
No, all right. I tried.
Good try.
It's you know, I'm all about the programming.
This is a big thing for them because the Sony event, they showed off a bunch of games, and now this is Microsoft's chance.
Yeah.
And, you know, Halo, I think, will be front and center. Halo, what's it called? Infinite, maybe? Halo, yeah. The next game.
Anything else that we should be looking for?
Well, Microsoft, in the build-up to this, has been doing a series of blog posts where they kind of highlight individual pieces of tech in the Xbox Series X. The most recent one, which was yesterday, probably dealt with the storage tech. And this is actually kind of interesting because most people seem to believe that the Xbox is a little more powerful than the PlayStation 5 for the most part.
Spec-wise, it kind of looks that way, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's going to be in real world, you know?
Yeah, real world is, I'm sure they're going to be very comparable. But Sony has been touting this kind of super fast SSD that they have in the PlayStation 5.
Right.
It's supposed to be faster than anything you get in a PC or whatever. It's supposed to be incredible. So Microsoft talked up this week what they're doing for storage. And, of course, it's 3,000 words of gobbledygook. But what it basically amounts to is super fast SSD, you know, it's a NVMe SSD, which is what you get in really high-end, laptops and so forth. 2.4 gigabit per second of raw I/O throughput, which is over 40 times the throughput of the original Xbox One, which is, you know, that was a hard drive. So, of course, it is. I mean, but that's important because, you know, as games get bigger and bigger and more streaming and you're, you know, racing more stuff through the drive, you don't want a 4,800 RPM hard drive hold up
no,
the works
you
on the back.
Don't. You know? That's true.
Yeah. So this, you know, I mean, I think the system itself is obviously very powerful. I think the storage, I will say, for whatever reason, Xbox 360, this was the case. Original Xbox One, it was absolutely the case. Storage has always been kind of the weak link on the Xbox side. And it seems like with this one, finally, they're like, all right, look, we're going for broke on this one. Because, you know, again, you got to look out year. Whatever they do, it might be fine year one. You got to look out year eight.
Right.
You know, this thing has to be future proof. And I think it looks like they're doing the right thing with it. So.
Although I always just added an external drive and everything was fine.
Well, that was, depending on the Xbox, a USB 3, I think it was the original Xbox One, USB 3 external hard drive was faster than the internal drive.
Right.
That's stupid. I mean, it's just stupid.
It shouldn't be that way. No, NVMe is the right way to go. And that's because the stuff has dropped in price.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's competitive now and it lasts a long time. There's no, you know, initially there might have been some concern, oh, these are going to wear out, but I think we know now not.
Yeah, and I mean, presumably within the lifetime of this device, there'll be a lot of game streaming going on as well, and we'll see.
I just bought enclosure, a Thunderbolt 3 enclosure for my system at home that holds four NVMe drives, M.2 NVMe drives in it.
Yeah.
So it's 4 terabytes.
So the enclosure is like
SSD.
This. It's like the size of
it's not very big. Right? Yeah. It's a little box.
Those things are tight. They're like sticks of gum.
Mostly the space is cooling the fan.
Yeah. That's funny.
But it's so nice because it's Thunderbolt 3. And USB 4 will be this way too. 40 gigabytes per second. That's awesome. Really good. You know, that's as fast as anything on the bus. It's PCIe speed. So that's there's no reason of all things, your game machine should totally have that.
Right.
All right. We're going to get to the back of the book here in just a second. Unless there's anything else. Did we get it all?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even mention. There was a Game Pass announcement just about the second half of July. There was nothing exceptional in there, so I didn't even mention it. But if you are a Game Pass subscriber, there are new games coming over the next 2.5 weeks, whatever it is, so.
Well, in that case,
nothing struck my fancy.
I think it would be a good time for me to talk about going to the doctor. Now, wait a minute, guys.
Uh-oh.
every guy I know goes, no, not me. Who? What? Doctor? No. I'm fine. I'm fine. No problems here. Fit as a fiddle, right as rain. I'll just walk it off. I'll rub some dirt in it. It'll be okay. But that's how guys are. That's why Roman had to be invented. And thank goodness it did. It's essentially a digital health clinic for guys and all the things that ail us. They have both over-the-counter and prescription medications. You'll get to see a real doctor licensed in the U.S. Anyone who's dealt with, I'll give you an example. Perfect example. Erectile dysfunction. A bunch of guys just turned off. Nope, not going to talk about it. Don't want to hear about it. But why would you suffer? Look, I understand you know, you don't want to talk about it. Maybe, you know, you're certainly not going to tell your buddies because they'll rib you endlessly for the rest of your life. And that's why men don't know. It's very common all the time, even among young men. In fact, that's how Roman was started. A young guy whose father was a doctor and was having problems in the sack. And he could talk to his dad. They had a good relationship. Dad says, you know, that's in your age, that's serious. They did a workup. He had undiagnosed heart disease. He had surgeries. He's lucky he had his dad there. But a lot of guys would have just said, yeah, grin and bear it, you know. Oh, it happens, that kind of thing. No, this is why you should see a doctor. And nowadays, telemedicine is the best way to do it. You don't have to leave the house. There's a simple, convenient way to get the treatment you need, whatever the situation is, without leaving your couch. That's because these great guys at Roman have been building a digital platform to connect you with a doctor, a real physician, an MD, licensed in your state, without leaving the house. It's a digital health clinic for men. You'll get discreet, professional care. No one's going to smirk or snicker or, you know, give you a nickname. No, you can get a genuine prescription medication or over-the-counter treatment, depending on what is appropriate, delivered in unmarked packaging. They do everything, not just sexual health like ED, but hair, skin, dandruff, eczema, daily health, prostate health, bone health. Actually, they have a testosterone supplement. As you get older, your testosterone declines. I've been taking that. I feel great. It's really, really great. That's over-the-counter. Roman makes it easy and affordable to get the treatment you need right from your house. Grab your phone, grab your computer. You'll complete a free online visit. And then you'll hear back from a U.S. licensed physician within 24 hours. And if the doctor, and by the way, this is the most important part. This is where you're going to get treatment, the treatment you need. If the doctor decides a certain treatment is right for you, he or she can prescribe it and ship it directly to you with free two-day shipping. You also get free unlimited follow-ups with your doctor anytime you have a question or want to adjust your treatment. I mean, this is something we guys have needed, especially for a long, long time. With Roman, there are no commitments. You can cancel anytime. If you're struggling with ED, no need to be embarrassed or suffer. Stay home and go to GetRoman.com/windows. GetRoman.com/windows. Free online visit, free two-day shipping. Kind, thoughtful, nurturing care from a real physician. It's really what we need, and there's no stigma. GetRoman.com/windows. Free online visit, free two-day shipping. I think it's the best thing ever. Highly recommend it. GetRoman.com/windows. Time for the back of the book, Paul Thurrott's tip of the week. Oh,
making me follow that.
All right, sorry. So.
This does not imply an endorsement by Paul Thurrott in any way, shape, or form.
Right. If you're having OneDrive fetch dysfunction, we have.
Who doesn't?
Yep. It happens to all of us.
Yes. No need to suffer.
So Microsoft. There's a feature of OneDrive that a lot of people probably don't know about called Fetch. And what happens is you enable it on your computer in OneDrive. And when you go to the web, you can actually navigate the file system of that computer from the web interface. So, you know, in other words, you could have it on at home, go to work, bring up the website, navigate to that PC in the OneDrive web interface, and not just see what you have in OneDrive, but see anything on the file system, including, in some cases, even network shares. So it's kind of, you know, obviously useful. The reason it existed was so that people could access files that they weren't syncing with OneDrive, right? When you think about how most people probably do that, they must have files on their desktop maybe or in their documents folder or something like that. So why are they getting rid of it? We don't know why. Actually, Microsoft hasn't said why, but there is a replacement for it that they're not really touting enough. And it's another feature that's part of OneDrive, which is just called backup. So if you right click on the little cloud icon for OneDrive in your tray and go to settings and then go to backup, you'll see that there is a manage backup interface, which actually when you first set up OneDrive on a computer now, you'll actually see this. And what it is asking you to do is backup your desktop documents and pictures folders to OneDrive. So these are folders that exist outside of OneDrive. And this is another way, the new way, that you can access other files on your computer. Not every single file, right? It's not every single location, but in the most often used places where they might be. So if you're upset about Fetch going away, first of all, if files are important, you should not be putting them on a computer in a place where they're only on that computer, right? I mean, just as kind of a matter of course. But if you're the type of person that works, you know, on your desktop, maybe uses Scratch Space, whatever, at least do this. You can back it up. And that way, when you're off on a different computer, you're out in the world somewhere, you'll always be able to access those things through the web interface on OneDrive. So
good.
That's the solution to that little problem. And then app pick. I actually have three app picks today. It's been kind of a weird week like that. But Stardock released Curtains, right? So this is, a lot of people think of this as the new window blinds. What Curtains is a window blinds-like program that takes advantage of the technology that Microsoft built into Windows 10 when they started adding support for dark mode. And what that means is it allows you to change the UI, but it works much more reliably because it's you taking advantage of an underlying Windows 10 feature. So, for example, like one of the things, they have themes that look like Windows XP, Windows 95, you know, things like that. Honestly, like, they're so clean looking and beautiful. Like, I actually really like the Windows XP theme for now. I'll probably get tired of it again, but it's kind of that green and blue UI from 2001 or whatever. And they have modern themes, you know, that look like that have names, you know, based on Fluent and other nonsense words that Microsoft uses to describe the UI. But it's really nice. Like, this is really, really nice. And so it's $10 as a standalone program, or you get it as part of Object Desktop. This is a really good one. I think I mentioned this last week, but Halo 2 is, as of today or yesterday, now available on the PC. And that means you can get it through Xbox, right, in the Microsoft Store. You can get it through Steam if you're a Steam gamer. It's $9.99 for the standalone game, or you get it as part of the Master Chief Collection. So as of today, they have remastered, and it's 4K, 60 frames a second.
Wow.
Halo Reach, Halo Combat Evolved, Halo 2, and now Halo 3. So Halo 3 ODST will be next, and then Halo 4, and I think that might wrap it up. I think that might be everything.
That's so pretty good, and that's, you know, the collection's only $40, so.
I know. No, that's
a
good
thing, you know?
Halo's awesome. It's awesome. I should say, when I say Halo, I really mean Halo 1, 2, and 3, and actually ODST I remember liking quite a bit, although I have not looked at that recently.
What's that stand for?
Yes, it's like off, it's drop special. It's like, it's something to do with, it's like the soldiers that drop from space. Off planet drop something. I can't remember. It's the other guys that were on the other guys who were like Master Chief. Like,
right.
Whatever, something like that.
Special forces for the future.
Yeah, someone out there will know ODST. Yeah. The ODST is a single player campaign that takes place at the same time as the events in Halo 3.
Ah,
so it's a team of people dropping down to the planet, you know,
right,
finishing the fight. Back when Halo was supposed to be a trilogy, but now there are a lot of games. Side games and all kinds of stuff. This was announced in the middle of that bizarre blog post about the latest Windows Insider build, but the Microsoft Launcher, which is the Android launcher that Microsoft makes, is out in a big new version. So this is the version that it's version 6, but this was the thing they were testing through a preview version of the app, and it's supposed to be kind of an early peek at what we expect the Surface Duo UI to look like. So I this just happened before the show. I haven't had a chance to look at this. I have looked at, you know, the preview version, but it was months ago. But if you have or are using Microsoft Launcher and you upgrade it, you'll get version 6, which is a big new version of the app. of cool. the launcher.
Cool, cool, cool.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
For our enterprise pick of the week, Mary Jo Foley.
Yes. So part of the reason I can't do your gaming show with you next week is there are a lot of things happening with Microsoft next week. And one of the bigger ones is, well, they're having earnings next Wednesday.
Oh, that's right.
Their Q4 earnings. Yeah. And then they on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, it's the Microsoft Inspire Partner Conference, which is their annual worldwide event, usually in person. This year, it's digital only. And Inspire is for partners, but typically there are a lot of product announcements and strategy announcements also during Inspire. And I'm not sure if everybody is going to be able to watch the keynotes. I know we are as press and the partners will obviously, but on day one, there's going to be a lot of partner announcements. So that's Tuesday. They're having their partner leaders talk to the partners about new programs and such. But day two is Satya Nadella and other Microsoft execs, including Julia White, who is the head of marketing for Azure, and Alyssa Taylor, who heads up a big chunk of the Dynamics 365 business. So I'm expecting there's going to be a lot of product news next week that hopefully we'll be able to talk about to some degree on Windows Weekly, and it won't all be saved up for day two. But Inspire is next week, and I'm just telling people that. So if the keynotes are open and you care about watching those, they're always very interesting. You get kind of a really good overview and glimpse of the different Microsoft businesses when you watch that, because Microsoft is explaining to their partners, here's what we're going to do going forward in terms of products and strategy. So, watch for us. Paul and I will be writing about this, and we'll be talking about the keynotes, I'm sure, on Twitter. And if they are open to the public, I'll make sure to tweet
links
where you can get them.
Maybe we'll want to stream it. Yeah. What day is that?
Yeah, day two. So day two is Wednesday, next Wednesday. And that's when Satya Nadella and Brad Smith and the Azure and Dynamics and Office 365 people are all speaking. Right. During that day two keynote.
That's during our show. Are you going to be?
No. I think we'll be knowing about some of this news under agreements, I'm guessing, beforehand. Okay. We don't know anything yet, but hopefully we will.
All right. So let me know if we should maybe,
cut away to anything.
Cut away. Yeah. I guess we could do that. If it's during, do you know what time the keynote is?
Yeah. Let me see. I know on the schedule here. I think because it's virtual, they're rebroadcasting it in multiple time zones and multiple segments.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Pacific time. It's at 8 a.m. 9, 10, 11.
So it'll be over.
11 a.m.
Oh, 11
a.m. Yeah. We'll already have seen it. Yeah.
Okay. So you'll have seen it.
11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific.
Yes. It'll be over. And then, you can report on it on the show.
We can. Yeah, we can.
All right, next week.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. And as we mentioned, 7 a.m. the 23rd, the following day, we have the Xbox reveal, and Paul and I will be hosting that.
It's going to be a busy week. Earnings, Inspire, Xbox.
Wow. And you have a code name pick of the week.
We do. Thanks to the Walking Cat. This is a new code name. It's Project Port Merion. M-E-I-R-I-O-N.
Oh, that's so funny, because I have some china in the Port Merion pattern.
It's a pattern, right? Because when I was looking this up, it's a china pattern. It's also a village in Wales.
Probably where they make Port Merion.
Probably.
Yeah.
And what it is in terms of Microsoft is it seems to be a part of their confidential computing strategy. So the way they describe it is, Project Port Merion is a way to explore hardware software code design for security in Azure's general purpose compute stack. And it says they're working with major CPU vendors and academic institutions on this.
So strange. What does it have to do with China?
I'm guessing it has to do with Wales, because you know how they love they love geographic code names.
Maybe that's what it is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But this is all about, it says here, we are actively collaborating with ARM as one of the partners.
Wow.
So this is all about improving the overall security from an end-to-end perspective, right? Hardware to software. They're co-designing it right into the Azure Compute Stack.
Right.
So it, right now it's a research project, but I think we could expect to see some of the technology from this showing up in Azure probably in the not-too-distant future.
By the way, Paul, Karsten, mm-hmm. of course, knows the answer. It stands for Orbital Drop Shock Troopers.
Shock Troopers. Oh, there you go. Yep.
I don't know if he looked it up or he just knew it off the top of his head.
I bet he just knew it off the top of his head.
And now it's time for beer. Mary Jo.
Yes, this is a very unusual beer. This is a beer for people who think they don't like beer.
Okay, okay, that's me.
It's called The Brite, B-R-I-T-E, hibiscus lime.
Ooh.
So if you like hibiscus and lime and you like the idea of a fizzy, sparkling kind of
it's like Budweiser lime for people who don't like beer.
What is hibiscus?
Hibiscus actually has a taste.
It's a beautiful red flower.
It gives it a pink color, but there's also a weird taste to it. I don't know. I've had hibiscus beers and I'm like, there's something.
Paul, have you ever had red zinger tea?
Yeah.
That's hibiscus.
That's the taste right there. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
It's rich in vitamin C, although I doubt this beer is. I wouldn't recommend it as a vitamin C supplement.
Probably not. But it's only 75 calories sparkling.
Oh, that's
it's great. Sparkling and tangy. And it tastes, I'm not kidding you, like a wine cooler or a juice spritzer or something like that. They call it a sour blonde ale. It's from The Brewery, which is a very famous craft beer brewery. They have a part of it called The Brewery Terror, which is in Anaheim. And they make a lot of kind of different sours and kind of specialty beers there. This one, when I had it, I'm like, wow, I would never even think that was a beer. But I would say I gave it to one of my friends and she said, wow, I love this. And I'm like, yeah, because it doesn't really taste like a beer. And she said, yeah. So it's a beer for introducing people to sours. It's not super sour. It's just very kind of light and effervescent, I would say.
Ah. It actually sounds quite good.
It's very interesting and very, very much worth a try for a summer beer.
It almost doesn't seem like a beer. You know, like a...
It doesn't.
It seems like a
wine cooler or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a spritz.
It's a spritzer.
It's like a spritzer. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cooler. I really like sours. So,
you would probably really like.
Probably like it. Yeah.
Yep.
And I like red zinger tea.
I bet you would.
I
very
really like
much
scotch.
Like it.
I like it.
I want to get drunk. Would I like this beer?
Yeah. I'm looking to get hammered. Is this a good choice?
Yeah, not for getting hammered. No. getting hammered. I love that. There are hibiscus whiskey sours, according to Virgil, so maybe that'd be more to your liking, Mr. Thurrott.
A little tired today.
I was up at 6 a.m. doing Pilates. Don't look at me.
Oh, boy.
I'm very excited about this. I'm going to put this on for you, and don't be afraid.
Was this like machine printed?
What they call a mask fitter. They finally came. These are based on a 3D model of my face.
Right.
And the idea is, I mean, normally this wouldn't protect you against anything, but if you put the mask material underneath it, it seals it around your face like that.
Could you put the mask over it to keep it from
because it's pretty ugly?
To your face? No, because you know when you're breathing and it's really hot and the mask sticks to your mouth and stuff?
I don't know
if you have that problem.
Well, see, that's why this has this little Hannibal Lecter tooth protuberance.
I know.
I'll show you in the close-up.
I'd like to put my mask over that to keep it easier breathing.
Yeah, this has a little... So that's the whole idea of this. You might like this, Mary Jo. The whole idea of this is, this is your nose, right? And you put the material in this grip,
and then
it holds
piranha.
It away from your face. Yeah, it's like a little piranha.
Wow.
So the cool thing is this is generated by a 3D program.
Yeah.
I showed you this, right? And then...
Yeah. And you can get a picture of your face,
yes.
Right?
And so it generated it. And then I sent this off to actually a place, the dental... they print dental stuff, 3D printers, Cadmus Dental in Arlington, Texas. And so they printed it out. And I have... This is the fancy one with the little Hannibal Lecter teeth. And then this is the one
with that. But I agree with you, Mary Jo. I think something that pulls it away from the face.
Yeah, it's like when you get those, the sleep masks that have little bulbs so it doesn't press against your eye.
Right.
Yeah.
Like it kind of bulbs out from it.
Yeah, I don't like the ones that where you, if you blink, your eyes.
You don't want the flat kind. No, you can feel it on your eye. Yeah. That's awful. Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I have ordered, Jammer V and I have ordered a Kickstarter that is a battery powered mask that has UVC lights in it and a fan. And it sucks air in, purifies it before you breathe it. We'll see.
Does it still do the job of a mask, though?
Yeah, that's the whole point of it. It's like sterile air coming into your mouth.
But how does the air go out?
Same way. So it's
through your ears.
No, you can't breathe out. It's only
you get used to it.
It's only So anyway, we do this show every Wednesday around about 11 a.m. Pacific. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, right after Floss Weekly. Let's see, 11 a.m. be about 1800 UTC. If you want to tune in, you can go to twit.tv/live. That's where we have all the different streams. There's video and audio. Pick the stream you want. Listen as we do the show, or wait till we get the editors on it and they take out all the swear words, the cussing, the fighting, the screaming, the gnashing of teeth, and they put
Mary Jo Ayala.
And then they clean that all up and they put that out. And that's only a couple of hours later. You can get that at twit.tv/WW. There's also a YouTube channel for all the Windows Weekly episodes, 681 of them. Or best thing to do, subscribe, you know, just collect them automatically. So it'll be there whenever you're in the mood. You got a minute or two to listen to Windows Weekly. Paul Theroux is at Theroux.com. That's his blog. He also publishes his books at LeanPub, LeanPub.com, including the Field Guide to Windows 10, which is now getting updated for 2004. So it's all very up to date. And you get that automatically if you buy the book. So that's nice. Some great posters there on how to use Windows 10 and things. Mary Jo Foley has no posters, but she does have a blog at allaboutmicrosoft.com where she posts regularly. That's her ZDNet blog. And together, they form the dynamic duo of Microsoft journalists. Next week, we'll be talking about Inspire and the quarterly results. We'll see if that...
We'll have to guess on that because that'll be after.
See how their roadside lemonade stand did this quarter.
Yeah, see how how many nickels they got.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Stay healthy on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Jason Howell, host of All About Android, where each week I'm joined by Ron Richards, Florence Ion, and a rotating crew of Android journalists, developers, and enthusiasts, where we talk about the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. You can subscribe by going to twit.tv/AAA or find the show in your podcatcher of choice. That's All About Android.